is the central moment of the whole Buddhist philosophy. And you may immediately say, how come? What about the Four Noble Truths about suffering? But you know, as you see, I assume that you read, yes, these pages from Edward Conze's book, Buddhist Thought in India. So, of course, from the point of view of that law of interdependent coordination, even suffering itself is what? Or its effect, its consequence, its, that is, of what? Of the primary ignorance, avidya, which figures as the first link in the law of interdependent origination. But very extremely important to bear in mind when we try to understand that law of interdependent co-origination. So, according to that law, it seems to be formally, everything seems to be formally very simple. So, first of all, we have ignorance, or as Conze says, befogged, confused state of mind. Yes. Then from that ignorance follows series volitional holding together impulses, which are called what? Sanskaras, yes. In the sequence of skandhas, sanskara is the fourth skandha, fourth heap, fourth aggregate of individual being. From sanskara follows sanskara, or we may put that, is the cause discriminating consciousness, and then come the four skandhas, four other skandhas other than consciousness as a consequence of that consciousness. From which are originated sense organs and the contacts with the objects of those sense organs, and then emotions falling from the contacts, as I explained to you before, the blackboard of organs of senses with those objects of senses, and so on. And finally, we have the human experience, human in double quotes. Yes, it may be divine, it may be animal, it does not matter whose. Yes, and we see the production of phenomena in the case of a man, it is production of man, that is his or her birth. And finally it results in the states falling from one's birth. That is, what follows from one's birth?
One's death.
One's death, sir. You are absolutely right. Never forget you, my lady. Yes, if you are born, you will die. Don't worry about that. Yes. And also, contingent upon those states is sickness. Yes. Is sickness, weariness. Yes. Old age, poverty, and other unpleasant things, which, being each of them a separate dharma altogether, constitute what is called suffering. Such is the law of interdependent co-origination. But, you know, it is only formally. And so today I'll try. And it is very difficult. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, that for me it is far more difficult. For me to explain it to you is far more difficult than for you to understand it. Because completely understand it is almost impossible for a simple human being like you. We are simple. We may remember something, yes, make a logical or semantical or linguistical analysis. Okay, yes. But not understand. Because, and with this I'll finish my little preliminary part of this lecture. Because if you really understand all, shall we say, 12 links leading from primary ignorance to its final effect, suffering in our life, one who really understands it is not any longer what? Subject. So here we are coming again to this principle that you know it, yes, in the Upanishads, in a way, is the same. If you know something, yes, you are that, yes. Be it positive something, like Atman, Brahman, or negative as suffering. That is, knowledge, again, figures as an all-powerful factor, annulling all negative factors. If you know something, you are not any longer influenced by that something. Now, the second point in today's lesson, which is also not very easy to understand, that this law of interdependent co-origination with its 12 links from primary ignorance up to suffering in your present state, now and here, that law cannot be explained if we start to explain it from the beginning. Only reverse or inverse explanation can work here. So we have to begin with what?
Yeah.
With that, with our actual suffering. With our actual death, not necessarily my death, well, my relations, my friends, my parents. Yes, we have to start with what there is now, with what happened or is happening now, and go back from that final effect, back towards the primary cause. And in no other way. Now, the third point. And again, please, never forget to ask me if you do not understand something. Yes, please, shoot.
Why is that method necessary? Because that's the only place that we can access. That's the only thing we can access. No.
The only situation to which we have access is just now, this very moment. You talking to me, you seeing me, I answering you, however unsatisfactorily, but and seeing and hearing you. This moment is, as it were, in my possession, yes? And it is, it can be perceived, not only perceived by my senses, not only conceived by my, shall we say, that third skanda, third aggregate of karma, that is what? Sanjana. In terms of, well, language, yes, reasoning, and name. But, yeah, I even dare to say, I know it. I know that I am here now, yes? And you may immediately interfere and ask, but there is no you, yes? And then my answer will be, now it doesn't matter. It is simply a common language we are talking. And I figures here as a kind of a simple word of ordinary language, not as a philosophical notion, because in Buddhism, I is not a philosophical notion, but a kind of purely empirical idea, while in fact there is no I, but there are five aggregates of dharmas, yes, that you know. Splendid. Now, so you have already understood that this explanation can be given only if we go in our explanation from the present moment back, from what we have here at hand, suffering, yes? Yes. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, however temporarily, still I suffered when I realized that that my watch deceived me. It was not a serious suffering. But if I were an arhat or a great yogi, I would have never, given any attention to that at all, yes? First of all, because I would have never used such an ideologic instrument of civilization as watch, yes? Etc., etc. So, we are coming to the next point in today's lesson. So, the next point is that what we used to call cause in Buddhism, it is usually figures as condition. There are a lot of conditions. Conditions in terms of which the one's present situation or event of whatever kind can be interpreted and understood. So, strictly, philosophically speaking, there is no such thing as reality in Buddhist philosophy. Instead of reality, we have what? Conditions. But what is very important, and try to bear it in mind from this very moment till the end of my lesson today, yes, reality embraces or comprises, well, two sets of conditions, two different sets of conditions. Or shall we put it like that, there are two realities. Each of them connected with one of the two different sets of conditions. To wit, there is reality of that which is conditioned by something else. Yes? You follow me? And there is reality of that which is unconditioned. For instance, let us take such a thing, I do not hesitate to say such a thing, or in Buddhist terminology, such a dharma, such a combination of dharmas, dharma as I in the simple linguistic sense, everyday language, I. My being here is conditioned by my age, yes, by my very dubious expertise in Buddhist philosophy, by my previous works, yes, and by my wish and desire to be here. All these conditions are low-level conditions, yes. Each and every decent Buddhist yogi of the 4th century BC would have been ashamed to talk about such trifling, insignificant things, yes, as universities, expertise, qualifications, and even age. Yes. So, now let us suppose that Buddha the Lord would appear and say, no, you are deeply wrong. You are here simply to explain that little what you know to your students, some of which may happen, will be no more than a couple billion years from now enlightened and become Buddhas. Yes? So stop. Stop. Such a reality is unconditioned, because the Buddhahood is unconditioned, is beyond any conditions. And Buddha himself is beyond any conditions. And those thought up by me, words by Buddha, if they were really spoken by Buddha, would have been put under the rubric of under the rubric of the unconditioned. Now, but ladies and gentlemen, in our conditioned beings, in our beings which are subject to the law of interdependent origination, yes, we deal very often, more often than not, with not with things as they are, or shall we say, not with dharmas as they are, not even with their combinations as they are, but with our own psychological and linguistical presentations of those things in words, yes. And in this respect, it would be interesting to give you a couple of examples, or rather, three examples. Again, bear it in mind about two realities of two different sets of conditions. Yes, you promise. Now, the first case. The first case. About illustrating the role of presentations of the sensory phenomena of our organs of senses and their objects and corresponding or respective consciousnesses, and expressed in words. Probably you know that example. Well, an American court, one case about the murder, yes. So, attorney for the prosecution asks the witness, so what did you see? How did it happen that the man in question was shot? I remember it very clearly, no? I was just in front of that bar, yes, bar of course, yes. One of the focal elements of American civilization, like pub in England, yes. Mind it, is that two totally different harmonic phenomena, American bar and English pub, never confuse them, yes. It would be methodologically incorrect to confuse them. So I stood just in front of the bar, and then a young man came out of the doors of the bar. A question. It was dark. Yes, it was dark. How can you say he was young? Did you really see he was young? Yes, Your Honor. Yes, it seemed to me that he was young. Yes. So, we start dealing with what? with that ambiguity, that questionability of presentations of organs of sentence. And then what did you see then? And then police car came, and one policeman got out of it and shot the chap. Yes. Sorry, how could you know that he was a policeman? Oh, well, the car was a police car with siren and police lights, and he was, well, dressed as a policeman. So, Your Honor, attorney says, the witness says that he saw the car, which looked as if it were a police car, and a person who looked as if he were a policeman because he was in police uniform, yes. And it is a typically Buddhist case, no? The organs of sense. And presentations in words founded on, based on, or founded on those organs of senses are what? Deceptive. It is very, very important to bear in mind. They are deceptive. Why? Because they deal with conditioned things, with hundreds and thousands of interwoven and interrelated conditions. And no man or woman or elephant or God or Einstein could count all those conditions, could calculate them. It is impossible from the point of view of the first reality of the first set of conditions. Well, of conditioned conditions. Now, I would like to follow my beloved author of these pages, the late Edward Conze. Yes?
What do Buddhists see as the original cause?
Yes.
Because there must be an original cause.
Original cause. And at the same time, final effect is ignorance. Original cause is ignorance. And at the same time, it is a final cause. And then let me also remind you that in the cases where in our Western, particularly, but Indian too, philosophies, we say because of, yes, no, as we see at the beginning of the law of interdependent origination, yes. So primary there is ignorance, yes. And from from ignorance follows infinite series of volitive actions or sanskaras. Okay, very simple. But instead of because of, Buddhist texts usually use the word when there is ignorance. You see, it is change philosophy, yes? Because it implies what? When I say when there is ignorance?
At a specific time.
A time. It is very important because it implies time. And various conditions are related to one another in terms of time established by when. Yes, by the word when. When I am ignorant, yes. I killed that poor chap. When I am ignorant. Instead of because I am ignorant, you understand it? It is not only subtlety, it is a kind of, a, however tricky, philosophical point, you see it, when. And it is when, not in terms of some past time, but when. Now, well, at this very time, yes, but again, all that relates to the first set of causes or conditions, yes, which implies a kind of the state of the world as it is, the normal ignorant state of the world, in spite of all great achievements in science and technology, yes, and the means of mass communications, yes, yes, yes. So, and now we are coming to the opposite to the opposite situation. And let me return to one gatha, yes. I will quote it for you. You read several gathas, yes. Gathas, that is little verses where those who have already become, as it were, Buddhas reveal their achievements just at the moment of their transition to the state of the Buddhahood and impending nirvana, yes. Which means that at that very moment they cease to be what? Conditioned, ladies and gentlemen, and thereby cease to be subject to the law of interdependent origination. So let me quote one marvelous gatha. Yes, the girl tells whom? The Buddha, because that gatha is recited by one to Buddha who appears before him or before her in his special body, which can be seen only yogically in the state of deep meditation, which is called Sambhogakaya. That is the second body of Buddha. The first body is his human body.
Can you spell that, the Sendodaka?
Sambhogakaya. The Sambhogakaya, or, well, don't try to remember the Sanskrit term. You may say the body in European literature, it is usually body of glory. That is, but it would be better to render it into English literally. That is the body of enjoyment, Sambhogakaya, the second body of Buddha. Now, so that future Buddha tells her story. At that time, O great teacher, I was the daughter of most famous merchant in our city of Benares. I was very happy, I was very beautiful, we were very wealthy, but so it chanced to happen that I fell in love with one young man, tall, strong, beautiful, clever, with sparkling eyes, and he fell in love with me too. And so we started seeing each other, and once he said, let us walk and let us talk about our future together. And they climbed to a very beautiful rock which was in the middle of a grove, also very beautiful. Everything was very beautiful, yes. And little birds, yes, and happy elephants around. Elephants are always happy in Indian folklore. and little innocuous and harmless silver snakes, yes. So usually, and it was early in the evening, and then they climbed at the top of the rock, and that beautiful young man kissed her and embraced her, and his embrace began to become strangling her, because he wanted what from her? Has unique emerald necklace around her neck, yes. But don't be afraid of such vicissitudes of love, yes, and of life. So, and she was suffocating, and at the last moment, she cried and pushed him over the edge into the abyss under the rock. After that, she immediately realized what? Transitoriness of all things. She was a, what? She was a beautiful, tender, young virgin, and next moment she became what? A murderer. She pushed him over the edge of the rock, not to be strangled by him. And she realized that it was not a kind of mishappening, misfortune, that it was one of the manifestations of the universal law of suffering. And when she realized it, well, she descended from the rock, and suddenly who appeared before her? The Buddha, of course, yes. The Buddha appeared and said, "Oh, Sabala, in order even to make the first steps on the path towards enlightenment, towards awakening, towards nirvana, you had to practice yoga and study for years and years. But you have already had your lesson. You are the most talented pupil in the Sangha community of Buddhist pupils, ascetics. So you will become a Buddha very, very soon." And these words were pronounced by her in that gatha. Some other excerpta from which you read. Yes, that collection of gathas. But you, what? Why am I quoting that? In connection with the law of interdependent origination, because the state from which she was revealing it was what? Not? It was not a conditioned state. She was beyond the world of interdependent origination. She was not any longer subject to any conditions. That is why, yes, unlike that poor witness in the American court, you cannot say, but you look, are you sure that the guy was young, yes? Are you sure that your necklace was emeralds, yes? Are you sure that it was he who asked you to climb the rock? No such monkey business, yes? Because she had already been in the unconditioned state from the point of view of which there could be no sensual mistake. Because if you are in that state, you are in the state of, as it were, not any subject to all deceptions of your organs of senses and your mind. You are, as the same author, Edward Conze, liked to put it, in a realm of pure consciousness. That is almost a nirvana. So you can be impeccable, an impeccable witness of yourself and your life. Because your witnessing is not obscured by any conditioning factors. Because, ladies and gentlemen, never forget that the very word conditioning at the same time means obscuration. Why? In the first place, because each and every event, each and every fact of your or any other life is conditioned by so many, by such an imaginable a multiplicity of conditions that nobody could calculate them. Nobody could take them into account or consider them separately. And the thing is that the Buddhist attempt to cognize, to know the conditions, that attempt in fact is an attempt to achieve the state where those conditions have no any longer any importance. At the same time, the last remark, and then the smallest interval, I must be punished, yes, by my being late. Yes, the thing is that it is again very, very interesting. So all conditions are interwoven with one another and are interrelated. All actions are in fact not actions but interactions. There can be no pure action. Let me give you an example. Yes, you probably, well, forgive me for my inroads in this sphere of sciences, but you know what is indeed very interesting to note, because if you have two elementary particles, yes, you heard of them, yes, like electron or like neutron, yes, or neutrino, yes. You know, sort of beginnings of physics from your very good, I'm sure, secondary school, yes. Now, but you know, each and every modern theoretical physicist would say that all those particles are purely fictitious, non-existing entities, still they come into what? Interaction. As such, they are sheer fictions, because they reveal themselves as phenomena only in their interactions with one another. And that is why the Buddhist formulation of the law of interdependent co-origination, well, is such that, try to remember it, and it is written here in the pages I ask you to read, that in fact there is no origination, there is no production as such of anything by anything else. There is only one thing, interaction and interdependence. Now, 2 minutes interval. Mm-hmm.